Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Okay, I made a faux pas. I forgot to load up the wrong thing. All right, today we're going to talk about 15-minute villages, which I got that idea from 15-minute cities, so we're going to explain that. And then we're going to get into we got two real-life math problems. So today we're going to further get into solving a $300,000 math problem. And we're going to break that down a little bit more. All right, hold it. I'm on my phone navigating here. So, all right, but we have to finish up with our morning motivation. So here we go with No Excuses Basketball.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarion. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection, but he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarion took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarion, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Okay, we have on the slate for today 15-Minute Villages, which was inspired by 15-Minute Villages. We'll go through that a little bit later. But we want to get started on, because we want to chip away with this every day, real-life math problems. Now, our primary goal for the year, this year, 2023, is, because our birthday is December the 24th. We'll be 10 years old on that date. So, is to build, have a seven-figure day, all right? So, we figure to reach that goal of seven figures, that's a bare minimum of $1 million gross receipts, and one day on Christmas Eve, December 24th, we've got to build at least, well, on a high end, maybe 100 houses in one day. So it's March now, near the end of March. Well, it was the end of March almost. So we're starting now, so we're going to plan on paper first what we're going to do, and then we're going to be practicing building more and more each month until we reach that goal. So on December 24th, we're rolling with it. So the math problem, and I'm gonna count it off like this, and we'll have it posted for people tomorrow on our Facebook page, which is DIY Housing TV at Earthwell Forest. But we're starting off with another real life problem that which will build to that, because you know we're breaking this down by parts, and we're even going to take what we're talking about today and break it down. All right, so essentially, this is something that I found out about last week when I was in court, and there was a case in front of mine. The guy has a $300,000 property tax bill. It's been in the court system for the last six consecutive years. So the judge could have foreclosed on him last Wednesday. Today's Tuesday. Could have foreclosed on him last Wednesday. But he says, look, we'll review the case. He called them status hearings. On May 3rd. So he's got from last Wednesday, which was the 22nd of March, he's got until May, and it's still March, he's got until May 3rd to come up with $300,000. All right. So let me frame this as a math problem. Just like we had third, fourth, fifth grade, or whatever grade, sixth, seventh, eighth grade, we had these word problems. You know, if Johnny had 10 apples and ate two of them and gave three away, how many would he have left? All right, so we all have real-life math problems, and we're forming these math problems that we have as adults so you can get it like you got it third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth grade, ninth grade, what have you. So in this case, Johnny's got a house that's worth, let's say, $500,000. And Johnny has a tax bill of $300,000 that's owed, you know, with penalties and fines and all that. And Johnny has until, although Johnny has been in court for the last six consecutive years, Johnny has until May 3rd to come up with $300,000. And Johnny, now we got some rules here because this is a real life arithmetic problem, and you can only solve it. You have to use arithmetic. You cannot borrow money. You cannot go to the government for any kind of assistance. All right. Now, it's Johnny's case is in court right now, and as a defendant, and he was put in court by a plaintiff. So I can tell you this right now. The plaintiff is seeking a legal solution, and he's been in court for six consecutive years trying to get a solution. The judge is in court, and the judge, he's trained in law. But what the judge doesn't know, and what the plaintiff who initiated the case doesn't know, and what Johnny doesn't know, this isn't a legal problem. They're trying to solve a math problem. They're trying to solve an arithmetic problem with legal means, and that's why it's been in court for the last six consecutive years. The plaintiff, had they known better, would have recognized this as, wait a minute, Johnny has an arithmetic problem. The operations of arithmetic are four of them: addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. Your solution will be found in those four primary operations, not in a court of law. And, of course, Johnny didn't know that because Johnny has been trying to borrow money the tax bill just gets bigger and bigger. Why? Because it's an arithmetic problem that can be solved on a second or third grade level. But for some reason, we have not been culturally conditioned for that. So that's one of the things we're doing here on DIY Housing TV, is we're thinking out of the box and putting things in what I could consider at least proper context. So I'm about to play an audio that I've played on here many times before. Because in order to solve this $300,000, because, you know, May 3rd will be here real soon. It's March, what's today's date? It's March 28th right now. So what can Johnny do? And there's a lot of people out here like Johnny. Okay. And they're thinking they got a legal problem. No. They're going to legal aid. They're hiring lawyers. They're trying to defend it. No, you don't have you're going to the wrong professional. A third grader can solve this one if you give them the right information. So we're going to play an audio here, which I call Nine Friends. Listen to this audio carefully. For those who have listened to it a gazillion times, listen to it again, because we're going to apply the principles that you hear here and I'm friends, we're going to apply that to solving this $300,000 problem or math problem that needs to be solved before May the 3rd of this year. And that's coming up soon.
I say some shit to y'all that I seen yesterday that made me smile, but it hurt me to my heart. There's a house next door to me that's been abandoned, and the yard, the grass, high as hell and everything. There's a couple of abandoned cars out there beside the house. Well, yesterday I get off work about 7 o'clock. A Mexican guy pulled up. He said, "These your cars?" I said, "No." He said, "I just bought this house, man." I said, "All right, that's what's up." He was like, "You know whose cars it is?" He said, "No." He said, "Well, I bought the house, not the cars." Okay, I'm like, cool. I'm thinking he's just coming to look at the house. I go back in the house, do a little straighten up. I swear to God, I walk back at the house. Now, I'm getting off about 7:20. It's fucking 9 Mexican trucks just pull up. They got fucking beer, lights, and shit, right? So I'm like, what y'all finna do? He said, "We finna fix this house." I said, "What kind of crew you got working after 7 o'clock? He said, "These my friends." The fucking house is fixed this morning. They went in there and drywalled that fucking house. Wow. I just left out of there. It was a fucking abandoned house. That bitch looked new this morning. Whew. It was an abandoned fucking house. And it looked new this morning. It's an old African proverb. Many hands make light work. I just don't think they're better than us. I just think we won't do nothing together. Wow. You're not hearing what the fuck I'm saying. It was an abandoned house yesterday at 7:15. That bitch is new this morning. He bought a tax lien house. I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to see, is one family going to live in there? Is they going to... I'm going to get to know the motherfuckers. You best believe me, when I make some money, I'm going to do it. I'm going to bring us together. And I'm not fucking with a lot of people.
All right. Now, in order for that... that to happen, the guy didn't, and let me review our mission statement here at DIY Housing TV. It's one sentence long. We teach people how to build houses, primarily tiny houses, using social capital. That's what the Amish do. That's what the Mennonite do. That's what the Hutterites do. That's what many people do. That's the ancient form of financing house construction, particularly the financing of it, is using social capital. We cut out the middleman, which in this case would be, as much as possible, which would be government-issued legal tender, also known as money in the United States. It's United States dollar, and in Britain it's the pound, in Europe, various European countries, the euro and pesos, and we can go on and on and on, rubles, whatever. So social capital. So through social capital, he got, now that was nine pickup trucks showed up. We got to figure at least one other person was in that pickup truck. So that gives him a crew, bare minimum of 18 people. And you figure the guy round trip was gone for, you know, he worked 8 hours round, you know, hour to get to work. Round trip, he was probably gone about 10 hours or whatever. And the house looked brand new. So what we're doing is essentially we're building I can't find audio on it. We were looking for audios. But yesterday we talked about a house built for $200. We played another audio yesterday. The house was built for $500. So here are the basic stepping stone miles we have. A $200 tiny house built for that, not sold for that, but built for that. Another one built for $500. Another one built for $2,000 with, you know, Lamar Alexander's $2,000 tiny house. That's without it being powered. If you put solar on it, you pay $3,000 for the solar electric system. So that brings a $5,000 model. Then there's a $10,000 model, which Chris Collins will be on in a few minutes. He talked about up to $20,000 model, which Chris Collins will be on in a few minutes. He'll talk about that. So those are the basic models that we have. All right. So if we're looking at we need $300,000. Let's just take the $300,000. All right, the first thing we have to do, because remember, this is an arithmetic problem. We cannot borrow not a penny's worth of money, although we can get partners. But we look to our social capital, all right, and we go out and get 9 friends. Now, if you don't have 9 friends, just tune in every day. We'll show you how you can get 9 or more friends, like really quick. All right, so let's take Lamar Alexander's the $5,000 tiny house. All right, if we build 60 of those, that'll get us $300,000. All right, that's our cost. All right, if we took the same $300,000 and then we went $10,000, all we need to do is build 30. And then, and I'll mention this every day, somebody that we mention here quite often, Randy Jones, he started off with one tiny house that he built for himself. Then somebody that knew him said, can you build me one? Then somebody came behind him and said, can you build? Randy Jones now builds, because he's got several friends now. He calls them employees now. That Randy builds 3 to 5 tiny houses per day. Zero bank financing, zero government financing involved. He sold out 41, took orders for 41 houses, about a couple of weeks ago, just on YouTube, which is social media. So we'll go through the breakdown and all that, but we're just trying to simplify this. So we got $300,000, all right, $10,000 using the Chris Collins method here. That's 30 houses, and then if we go top of the line, $300,000, and then Chris helps us build $20,000 tiny houses, which that's what Randy Jones does. We only need to build 15 tiny houses built within a 30. All of those can be built in April, taking the weekends off. All right. So the first thing, okay, instead of calling a lawyer or anything like that, is get cool, calm, and collected, take out a piece of paper, and write down who could possibly help you build. But that's the first thing. Some of you might be fortunate enough to have 9 or more. Well, an example that we gave just a few minutes ago. All right, 9 pickup trucks came in. We figured at least one other person was in that truck. So bare minimum 18. If 3 people were in per truck, that's 9 times 3. That's 27 people. You can do a whole lot with 27, 18, or even 9. But you gotta build some social capital. And you can do that virtually. If you don't know anybody but yourself today, if you got an internet connection and a smartphone, a tablet, or whatever, and a grill, or if you got enough money to spring for some cold cuts or some pizza, you can get 9 friends real quick if you feed people. And we'll go through that because, you know, we bite off this a little bit each day. So let me see. Let me go to Chris Collins here. I got to find my studio again. Now, if you don't want to do – now, what we're doing in tiny houses, okay, small structures, but for people who haven't heard this spiel before, I'll mention Mignon Francois, who I've mentioned her quite a bit. I'll mention her again. Mignon Francois, mother of 7 children, black woman, mother of 7 children. At the time, she was married. And the lights and the electricity were cut off the same day. She's got 7 kids now. Many days, they didn't even eat. And one was a baby, an infant, until 10 o'clock at night. So one day, and that, this is why I play, you know, the Damarian Styles thing, the kid with no hands who went out for the basketball team and made it. And then when he finally got into a game, he scored 6 points. You got to at least try. All right. Mignon, one day somebody knocked at her door, and she answered the door, and it was a real estate agent that she knew. And the real estate agent asked her, "How come it's dark in there?" She said, "Well, I'm meditating." Okay, but she didn't tell her that the lights were out and the water was out too. Anyway, and I guess the kids were off at school or whatever, except for the baby. So she said, "Look, you know those cupcakes that you've been passing around the neighborhood?" And this is a Faith Street story. That's why I play the Steve Harvey piece every single morning. Because we all have packages sitting up in the warehouse waiting for us, but we got to be on Faith Street to pick it up. So not only were her lights out, her water was shut off, she's got 7 kids to feed, let alone her husband and herself, and their house is in foreclosure. They're about to lose the house. If social services or child protection got wind of her story, more than likely her and her husband would have lost those kids, or they would have been in jeopardy. So the real estate agent asked, "You know those cupcakes that you occasionally pass around the neighborhood? Look, I got an open house, a few doors down, you know, this afternoon, late this afternoon, and this evening. I do a door for each one of the cupcakes." And for each one of the cupcakes that you can whip up for me. So she didn't pay a deposit, but Mignon said, "No problem, I have them for you." Mignon only had $5 in her pocket that day, and that $5 was set aside to feed her family of 9, 7 kids and 2 adults. So she must have went to the dollar store, Family Dollar. I don't know where she went with that $5. Well, she had grandma's recipe. She called her grandmother a prior, and her grandmother had given her a recipe for cupcakes. Mignon didn't had never baked a cupcake before, but 2 of her daughters had. So some kind of way they got the materials, and they probably went to a neighbor's house or something like that, where they had some social capital. You got to have some friends out here, and she baked 60 cupcakes. She real estate agent came over. She paid her $60. So she took 5, turned it into 60, and took 5 out to feed the family for that night. By the end of that week, Mignon had took that $5, which turned into $60 in a day, less than a day, turned that into $600. Long story short, she was able to get the lights cut back on, the electricity cut back on, that's 2 things in one time. She got the electricity cut back on, got the water cut back on, and made more than enough money to get the house out of foreclosure, so they kept their home. They still had that house in New Orleans, Louisiana today. Her website is called The Cupcake Collection. We're working on getting her on this podcast so you can talk to her directly. She also has a location of The Cupcake Collection in Nashville, Tennessee. She's taken that $5, and she went on Faith Street. She has made over $10 million of cupcakes and other assortment cakes and goodies that she sells now. So you don't have to do tiny houses. That's what we're doing. But whatever your widget might be, her widget was cupcakes. Our widgets are tiny houses. All right, so find a widget, something that you can make and sell. Whatever you believe in, whatever you can make and sell, because as we went over yesterday, how to create money, there are four distinctions of money. The two distinctions that we brought out yesterday was fiat currency. Fiat currency is legal tender. Legal tender is money that has been produced by a federal government. In the United States, the fiat currency of the United States, also known as legal tender, is the United States dollar. The $1 bill, the $50 bill, the $20 bill, the $50 bill, the $100 bill, the $1,000 bill, I've only seen one of those so far. It only costs about 6 cents to make those, no matter what denomination has on it, about 6 cents. But it's worth to the United States government and you, if you agreed to exchange whatever you're going to exchange for it, the $10, $5, up to, you know, whatever currency, you know, they have printed on the bill. All right. So that's fiat currency. You know, it comes in USD, Euro, British sterling pounds, Swiss francs, Argentina pesos, Filipino pesos, RMB in China, shillings in Uganda, whatever country. All right. Rubles in Russia, and Ukraine or whatever. All right. Now, then there's commodity money. All right. Now, me and you, we cannot manufacture legal tender, something produced by the government, because that's called counterfeiting. That's illegal. But what we can do is we can create and or buy commodity money. So what Mignon did with those cupcakes, that's commodity money. She can exchange those for fiat currency, which she did, or she can exchange those for anything she wants to. Mink coats, cars, trucks, boats, airplane tickets. You know, that's what you can do with money. Money is just a medium of exchange. Most people just have their mind locked in. It's fiat currency. No, like I said, there are four distinctions of money, and so forth. We just named two. The two most important that you need, the most important that you need to be familiar to get you out of hock for this $300,000 is you need commodity money, something that you legally control 100%. Once again, commodity money could be any type of widget, cupcakes, tiny houses, birdhouses, clothes that you make, clothes that you find on. Some people find stuff on Craigslist or OfferUp or Facebook Marketplace. They don't make any or create anything. They find a commodity at one price, they buy it at that price, and then they resell it at another price. They make a profit on the spread. So those are two things that we're going to be, you know, really concentrating on. So let's, before we go to Chris here, right, so, okay, $300,000, and we got until May 3rd to pony up with that. So if we go with, if we go with the $20,000 house, okay, We need to do 15 of those. That means we can do 15 of those in April, take weekends off, not sweat it. So before May 1st, we can sell those and make the money what we need or Johnny needs to be good. All right. And we'll be doing this with our own projects starting next month. There's one guy that Chris is connected to. He's in Orlando on 5 acres of land. So we'll be doing things between Lakeland and Hamilton County, Florida, and in Chicago. And like I said, we'll go through those different stepping stones. So, and then, of course, all this will be reduced to writing so you can follow us. Now, this goes to, I'm waiting for my phone to go through his machinations here. And then in the process, you know, we'll see how things work. Like I said, with one person we can look at, once again, Randy Jones started with one. And everything starts with one. But Randy Jones didn't have any bank finance, no help from the government or nothing like that. And now he does 3 to 5 houses per day. He's got an assembly line going. All right, before we get to Chris, 262, your mic is open.
Greetings, Grand Rising, you guys.
Grand Rising.
thank you. I got re-enlightened. I'm being silly, facetious. But that, you said it before, third grade math, simple mathematics, to get the $300,000, we tried to get that concept across to me so that I receive it properly. Because I probably did when I was having this
we're going to break that, the 300,000 down even further, because let's break it down to just $1,000. Okay, just $1,000. All right. What can you build for? Yesterday we played an audio of somebody who built a house for $200. And everything I'm saying, you can go on YouTube. They have videos on this. So this isn't L.A. speaking. Okay. So
yeah.
What's needed to get a $200? We also played another audio yesterday on, what does it take to get a $500 structure, built. All right. Right here where I'm at in Central Florida, okay, I'm making $4 a month off of my driveway. I rent the driveway up. So it won't be so intimidating. You have to fit down to something that you can definitely see. So, all right, if we take to actually simplify this even more, and I'm glad you brought that up. We're going to simplify this where it's, all right, listen to this. We're going to go from this example.
14-year-old bought this old camper for $500 and transformed it with her own two hands. Most teenagers are all too happy to spend their summers vacationing with family or lazing about with their friends. Some, however, embark on an adventure. Ellie Yeater was one such teen. After saving up $500 for a DIY project, she discovered a camper for sale online. It only cost $200, and so the 14-year-old decided to buy it. Once she purchased the camper, she got ready to completely transform it. The vehicle had originally been used for camping and hunting, and it was in pretty rough shape. It was fair to say she had her work cut out for her. Ellie got the idea to renovate the camper after her older brother Isaiah built a tiny cabin on their family's property. She wanted her own hangout spot, but she preferred something cuter and closer to the house so she could have electricity and Wi-Fi. She saw this as an opportunity to let her personality shine through with her design choices. That's exactly why she decided to paint the inside a peach color and fill it with polka dots and stripes. It suggested a fun and laid-back kind of setting. Molly's father, Larry, helped with the carpentry, and her grandmother even made curtains to hang inside. Considering how small her living space was going to be, there were surprisingly lots of windows to cover. During the day, however, she planned to let in a lot of natural light. Many other components of the camper were outdated. Guessing that it was made in the 1970s, the original tiled floor featured a peculiar green pattern. Ellie decided to place new tiles on the floor with a more updated and modern appeal. She collected items that she could use to decorate the camper, too. She wanted to make sure it reflected her own personality and items like this chic dress form. She even made sure to construct a winding path to her new hideaway. Ellie hoped to save up for a window air conditioning unit to install the very next summer. That way, she could enjoy sleepovers with her friends during the summertime without worrying about people becoming uncomfortable and overheating. She also hoped to invite a few friends over for a party. There was plenty of space for them to hang out, and they could even gather around the renovated kitchen bench seating. It looked like the camper was ready for its big premiere. You can see that Ellie took every possible detail into consideration. Not only did she spend a lot of time making the inside look brand new, but she did it on the exterior too. It was all in a summer's work for Ellie. It just shows that with a little creativity and elbow grease, you can turn anything into an awesome hangout space. Ellie was certainly going to enjoy spending time in her renovated camper.
Well, you've heard the phrase, one man's trash is another man's treasure. Well, Steve Shives knows it's true. He's made a fortune.
Okay, the second video, I'm looking for one. All right, we just heard that video of a teenager. There's another audio. Lauren Nelson is her name. She's from Attica, New York. Lauren went on, I'm trying to find audio from you guys, bought a camper off of Craigslist for $400. And I got an audio of her when you can hear it out of her own words. Anyway, she found a camper for $400. She put another $400 that she got from babysitting. She put another $400 in, so Lauren bought a camper for $400. As a matter of fact, she's got a story on YouTube also. Just put in Lauren Nelson, 11 years old. She's only 12 or 13 years old right now. Lauren bought a camper for $400. She fixed it up for $400. She had help of her mother, father, sister, some of her girlfriends. Now she's doing it for herself. Okay? She's doing it for herself. Now, Lauren could easily turn around and sell that camper for $1,000 profit. She can sell it for, let's say, $2,000. She bought it and fixed it. So she's got eight in. And what she could do is if she did this actually when she was 10. I'm trying to find that audio for you guys. Like I say, go on YouTube, look, put in Lauren, L-A-U-R-E-N, Lauren Nelson camper, a Lauren Nelson tiny house. And I'm trying to find that audio for you. But you did how you were, well, the audio I did play, you realized, you know, they bought something for $200. So, yeah, although you might have a big figure to deal with, shrink it down to some usable number that you could do, like, right now. And let me see, Lauren, L.A., okay. And then essentially do what you need to do to get it in sellable condition, whatever that midget might, I mean, not midget, but widget might be. Man, I can't find, all right, I got it in here somewhere. In any event, but what happens when you're looking for stuff and can't find it? You know, I got to find it. We're going to take this musical interlude. We'll be right back.
Tonight, the incredible transformation and the Buffalo Strong spirit that made it all happen. 7 Eyewitness News reporter Taylor Epps shows us how a young lady has completed her very own renovation project.
11-year-old Lauren Nelson had big plans for her summer.
I thought it was going to be pretty fun, but with COVID going on, it was going to be not as fun as it could be.
But things changed one day when she was flipping through an American Girl doll magazine at her home in Attica.
And she showed us a $650 VW bus. My husband was like, that's ridiculous. You could buy your own camper for that price.
So she did just that. Lauren saved some money and started looking. A neighbor just down the road had this 20-foot camper that caught her eye.
And then the one day, up popped a for sale sign, and she squealed the whole way home,
and she started negotiating.
It wasn't very hard. He said $500, and I said $400 because that was the money that I had in my bank account, and he said sold.
Then it was time to renovate.
It was a process. We brought home a family of mice. And so there was a lot of deep cleaning,
but that didn't stop her.
I was very motivated because I really wanted a place where I could just, like, hang out like my own house.
The whole renovation process took Lauren about 2 months, and with the help of family and friends, she was able to turn this into this.
It's called Camp Huguet. It means very comfortable and safe. It has its own kitchen and bathroom, so it's like a tiny house.
So now you're the owner of a tiny home at 11 years old.
Yes.
The whole project cost her $800. She has three envelopes that she puts her money in, give, save, and spend. I think she made a really good choice. She now says she's part of the Tiny Home Nation. She was able to turn her summer around and hopes to inspire others to do the same, which is awesome to see that somebody who's 11 years old had her own vision but now is out there and other people are contacting us and they've gone out and bought a camper to do the same thing.
If you're looking to have some big plans in the future, you should go out and do it. Make it happen.
In Attica, Taylor Epps, 7 Eyewitness News.
All right, Lauren is about, she's 12 now, unless she's at her birthday. She's 13 at the oldest right now. Now, what she did, her widget was a camper. That was her widget. That was her form of commodity money. Now, she got that and renovated it for her own personal use. Now, she could also, she or anybody listening to this live stream, could do the same thing and turn around and make it a commercial venture, starting right in her back, out of your backyard, and, you know, there's a whole bunch of people out here. They have $2,000 and they're looking for a place to stay. You can either, you know, because after she got it fixed up, A, she can rent it out, or she could sell it. Now, just substitute Lauren's name, Lauren, for your name. Well, let's get back to Johnny with the $300,000 tax problem. Okay. Now, Lauren, she used social capital. Mom, dad, grandmother, all those friends helped. See, so if you don't have social capital, go out and get you some social capital. Okay. And you can do, you can go on Craigslist, offer up. You can find something, fix it up, and resell it. And just something as simple as an 11-year-old did. Just wash, rinse, and repeat. Wash, rinse, and repeat. Wash, rinse, and repeat till you get a thousand. Well, in her case, one transaction will get her 1,000. She can probably even turn around and sell it for $5,000 and get it with no squabbles. So find some type of widget, whatever you feel comfortable with, that'll be your commodity money, and you can go from there. So, like, getting back to phone call, getting back to you, Reba.
That is pretty much awesome. And one thing about it, you certainly want to stick to your idea. So my first idea was to get an RV. And then camper. I have friends who have campers. Since I've lost contact with them, and they're reconnected with them, and then he sold them. He was out in Portage, Indiana. That's what I was trying to think of. They had a Huggy Bear camp, Yogi Bear camp. I said Huggy Bear. Yogi Bear camp, and they had, like, different campgrounds and fishing and all that. But they would actually rent spaces out there. That's when I first learned and we had conversations, you and I, about where they had this space actually here in Illinois and somewhere else where they would just charge, like, you'd be able to put your camper on the site and they would charge a plug-in fee for electricity. So,
all right.
But, yeah, sticking with your ideas is one thing. So now I know that those little girls have me thinking. Ellie and then Lauren, yeah, they have me thinking, going back to my original idea, which is what I'm doing at home. I'm going back to unfinished business with my home daycare. That would be perfect to have a space where they could go, because I'm in an apartment now. I don't have my home anymore. And then a space where they could just go inside. You know, even until I buy my building, I'm going to buy a small building. with the storefront,
right.
2 to 4 units. Yeah. Living space for income, you know. And so, of course, the business will be income.
Right, yeah, because there's a lot of people, I mean, like the example that both of them gave, and we're talking about two kids. They're not even teenagers, you know.
Right.
So you can
preteens.
You can right. You can particularly if you get it, and then you got people that are in dire straits, or you have a lot of the working homeless out here that they got reliable transportation, they have a steady income, but like you're up in the Chicago area, so in Milwaukee area. And
well,
I don't know how
both, yeah.
Chicago, depending on the neighborhood, can be expensive. And matter of fact, in a lot of your larger cities around the country, you practically need to be wealthy to live in a lot of these places. So, so there is a market. Trust me, I call it the Walmart market. The Walmart market, the general dollar market, there's a huge market of people out here that have $5,000, $10,000, some even have $20,000 to buy housing because they don't want to deal with a mortgage payment. You know, credit. If you're buying it for cash, you don't have to worry about a credit rating or nothing like that. So the market out here exists. So using the example of – so any one of those two examples or whatever your imagination can add to those two examples that we gave with Ellen and Lauren Nelson.
Well, our concept is basically
you
to create
jobs. You can come up with $300,000
well.
Within a month. What was that, Reba?
Well, you know, we were talking about the projects that we – are conceptualizing for to create jobs. It's
right.
More than that, to build self-esteem, to build family and community unity, as well as produce an income. So,
well, you know what? I'm glad you brought those terms up because you can take that concept. You take the concept of like with Lauren Nelson. Lauren, that was a family project. Dad recommended.
Yeah.
You can get it, you know. And then she went to Craigslist. She found something on Craigslist. They went together as a family. She, you know, made sure she wasn't ripped off. She bought the camper. They fixed it up as a family. Now, that camp, and once again, you can go on YouTube, put in Lauren, L-A-U-R-E-N, Lauren Nelson, 11-year-old camper, and you'll see the videos. There's at least two videos of her on there. And if an 11-year-old can do it, anybody can do it, all right? It's just a matter of wash, rinse, repeat. Wash, just keep on doing it. So that those two audios are an example of what you can do within a 30-day, actually a 20 I'm going to say a 20-day period of time, if you use the hours of the day correctly and you have enough social capital, you can turn that into a family business where everybody gets paid. And you'll make your $300,000, pays the tax, just off of those two examples that, you know, we just played. And one of those audios, I even forgot that I had it on here. Let's go to a 312 area code. 312 area code, your mic is open.
Yes, way on Yachalone. This is Brother Minister Plump, Robert Floyd Plump from Chicago, Illinois. And I'd like to acknowledge my beloved sister, Reba Brown Boone, I have something that we can share in terms of our freedom, justice, equality, and economics, and spiritual King 23 healing. You see, to be an owner of anything, and especially our home, is like the American dream plus the vision. However, I want to share this with you, too, because this is a part of our Spiritual Team 23 Healing in Chicago. Artists is for Wynn, Brandon Wynn. We'll be meeting today in Chicago, Tuesday, March the 28th. And we are going to be meeting at Lake Grove Village, 3515 South Cottage Grove, from 6:58 p.m. to 9. And for more information, call Minister Crump at 312-671-2773 or go to Facebook, Robert Crump, Cash App, $ Robert F. Crump, or Zelle us at the Harold Washington Foundation. And that's my father. And we are promoting jobs and businesses for any and everyone that really, truly want to be a millionaire. I'm the man to see. Is this Warren?
No, I'm not Warren. Okay. Warren's down in Texas, Houston, Texas. I'm L.A. In Central Florida.
L.A., right. I remember you used to come on the Female Solution, too. L.A., it's good to hear your voice.
I listen every day almost.
Right. Well, I was trying to share with you a thought for the day, like Black Love Matters too, and we got to get into that in terms of a better way of life to create our own destiny and our success, breed success concepts. We hold ourselves accountable for the conditions of our communities, support our efforts as we exercise change. And I just want to say this is a fantastic opportunity for economics, for us to grow individually and yet collectively, because family is the home base in America, and it's the number one thing that God created and want us to do together. And anybody that want to get married, then they can call me up, and I'll marry them up. And I even come if they pay for me to travel, I'll come to their hometown and do what we got to do and make sure that we have the concepts of, like Mayor Harold Lee Washington said in Chicago, we must pump the whole city, Chicago, America, and the world. So we're plumping it up in peace, love, unity, marketing people. And thank you, L.A., for giving me an opportunity to speak and say this, because it's important for us to develop a way of life of God bless the child, got his own and her own. So you still, we keep it real, you are our hero in the radio TV network. And Reba Brown, you are our shero. And both of y'all are like, and welcome to Team 23. Like Oprah Winfrey and Michael Jackson, the living and the dead Michael Jordan. Thank you. God bless your heart.
Well, thank you,
we love you. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Minister.
Yes,
Plump.
Sir.
As a matter of fact, we I started a club. We haven't had meetings yet, but on Clubhouse, Reba, I think I sent you the link two days ago.
Yeah, I sent the link. Yes.
Clubhouse room, it's, what was the name of the club? Chicago Tiny House Builders. And that'll be a dedicated, that's going to be a de facto radio station where people that are interested in the Chicagoland area where we'll be building tiny houses up in, I'll say the Chicagoland area. Reba, do they include, Kankakee County is part of the Chicagoland area?
Yeah, metropolitan area, yeah.
Or is that a little bit out of range?
Minister Plump, you still on? He was
Yes, I'm still here, Reba.
So would Kankakee be considered the Chicago area?
Well, it's a, it's a city of its own. It's about
right.
60 miles from Chicago,
yes.
So it can also be considered possibly as a suburb,
right.
for, community connections, you know, in reality, Chicago got many subsidiary towns. So Kankakee is not too far away from Chicago. So, you know, it is in the Chicago area. It's just not in Cook County.
Okay. Because we'll be...
Pembroke.
When I was up there, where do we go? We went to Pembroke and... what's the name?
Hopkins Park.
Yeah.
Hopkins Park, yeah.
So, but we can actually be doing stuff physically in Chicago. And then... transport it down to those other places.
Right.
So
welcome to Chicago. I'll be showing up in touch with you when you get here, Brother Plump. Thank you.
I got you on. Put it on the phone, and we're gonna set that up because, matter of fact, with Mama Evelyn Johnson, we'll be doing stuff with her too. 309 area code. Your mic is open.
Good morning, LA. Good morning, every
good morning, time. Chris.
Nice to hear all of you here this morning. And
Chris, you gave us the formula where we can do $1 million to $2 million in a day. Okay, so and that's our year end goal by December 24th. So for people who haven't heard, could you tell us what you do and give us the $10,000 model and the $20,000 model on how we can achieve that?
Okay. I make building material out of recycled steel, and we can produce 2 feet of material per second. So anybody can order material anytime you want it. And we've got factories across the country, so we don't have to ship it. So far, we can utilize the logistics. But a $10,000 model gives you everything to build it. So what you're going to get there is a complete package. You can take and stand that up. It's instantly going to be worth more money. Okay, this is bare bones. This is where your social capital comes in. This is where your friends come over. And you actually... put together a kit that's ABC 1-2-3 way of building. And we want to be able to get programs going in your community, showing the kids that they can do something positive in the afternoon, from designing houses and landscapes to building houses and changing what they see every day. So we want them to be the change they want to see, but they're going to get to see it. And that's one thing that's nice about the Instagram. See, I share the cars, you know, that the youth are working on up in Chicago. If you go on my Instagram and you see the cars are kids working on those cars. And if you see the reels and those houses were built by kids. And we want to show them that they are the solution to every adult's problem as they're inheriting all of them. And when I hear the inspiration of Lauren and her house, you know, pride in what they have, and they have something that's worth more than what they began with, and they did it with their time. You know, we're here for a reason, but if you can change someone else's life and take them out of that season, it don't matter if it's summer or if it's winter. You know, somebody's cold, somebody's hot, somebody's got a problem. And we want to just implement a solution. So I'm looking to do 50 cities. I'm going to do 2 houses on a trailer coming from another city. They're coming to pay it forward. So this city is going to build 2 houses and send them to the next city. But I'm going to show up with the material to build those same 2 prototypes and get the community to build 2 prototypes and put them on my trailer and send them to the next city. But we want to leave more. I'm going to leave 2 frames laying there in that city. So when I reach the 50th city, we want to activate. And on that day, we want to build 100 homes because each of those cities will have 2 of those frames sitting there. And we all throughout the country, we activate and we build not only those 100, it could be 2,000, 10,000. It comes down to the community sharing what's going on and getting involved. It's what you, not what you have done in life, it's what you're going to do. And, you know, it's not what you are being labeled as in life, because there shouldn't be a label on what you're going to be if all of us can change. But no one can change you but you. So we just want to inspire people, and that's who I am. My organization is HOPE, Housing Our People Everywhere. And I like to give people a double dose of acronym of HOPE, and that's Humans on Planet Earth, H-O-P-E. That's all of you. We're the human race. We're human beings, but we're not being human. But I think we're about to change that, and there needs to be the enlightenment. We're all alike. Not everybody's a leader, but you can definitely show people the way. You just need to be telling yourself you are the way. So I just appreciate being here, L.A. I've been here listening, and, you know, it's been all kinds of
Chris, share with us, share with us that story where you had those two, I guess they were teenagers or 11-year-olds. I don't know, they were young. And they put together something within a short, about 2 hours worth of time?
Yeah, they... What it was is I ordered the material. To see, this material is in every one of your cities right now, so it don't have to come to me. But I can make it to any length that you want, and I can give you that package so you don't have to touch the saw, but it's what you're going to see. And I had two kids that came from out in the country, and they don't have a problem in their little town of any homeless issues. But these two kids wasn't doing anything. They said they wanted to go with me. So I brought them into town, and one of them was taking the material that I had ordered. His dad was cutting it into the lengths that I needed, and he was setting the jigsaw puzzle. He was putting the pieces where they needed to go. And he looked at me, and he says, you don't need to do that, screw gun. He's 13. He says, you don't need to do that. He says, let me have it. And he took the gun from me, and I just instantly stepped back and started taking pictures. And him and his brother, 13-year-old and a 16-year-old, had never built anything in their life. They built from a 6-inch, it was 6 inches tall, 4 foot wide. So just imagine a stack of plywood sitting there. And they took that and turned it into a 10-foot by 10-foot, 16-foot tall with a queen-size bedroom in the attic. And they framed the whole thing in 2.5 hours. So... my city told me I could stand this up. We were going to do a sandwich workshop out of it. And there's 100,000 cars a day drive by this site where we did this. And it was right in the parking lot. And I just ran an extension cord from the business next door to run the saw and charge up the batteries on the cordless guns. But when we stood it up, the city made me take it down. Now, it had a door in it, OSB on it. You know, the trusses are up there, everything's on it. And they make me take it down because they told me, you know, for one, they didn't know that I was going to build it with two kids, and the kids were going to give them a solution that they've had a problem for over 100 years, and these kids don't even come from this community. But it's what could you do? And it's what they did. And I wanted to show the city what they could have. Even if they did it on this empty lot that we were going to build a grocery store on. Instead, they fined us $4,000 for doing it, for telling me I could do it. But it caused us not to get the property because we were in the motions. There was a family death and all this. Well, they wound up putting this huge issue right in the midst of it. And for the past 3 years, there's been no grocery store in that food desert for that reason. And it was going to be built 3 years.
Chris,
everything was set up to be done.
Yeah, a lot of these cities are slowly catching on. I know, like, in California, Governor Newsom, I think his name is, he says that the state of California, or at least on a local level, throughout the state of California, they plan on building 1,200 tiny houses or 1,200 tiny house villages. 1,200 is in there somewhere. Los Angeles does have a tiny house village now.
Yeah, that was a story.
What do you think, Chris?
That 1,200 is that is a story. The 1,200 is not the number that California is going to do. Governor Newsom last November, not this past year, but the year before, so it's been a little over a year and a half, about a year and a half now, he passed a legislation that I helped them. I just gave them a plan. I said, put it into law and do it so that we can get this problem fixed. And they did. And they're going to build 42,000 temporary homes for the homeless. So there is a bill that's in the legislation in California to build 42,000 of them. So the 1,200 was in one community area. And that community is having an issue. They don't want their property values to go down. People need to understand that the property value goes up whenever you get the people off of the curb. It's a proven fact. Anybody that winds up, you straighten up your neighborhood, it does not matter. Your property value will go up, not go down, because crime will go down, because people ain't out there trying to survive. And, you know, we also do the greenhouses, you know, so we want to get the food involved too and grow the fish, vegetables, and mushrooms and show the people that they can not only, you know, do something amazing, but also be able to always see it for the rest of their life. Know that they may.
Right. We'll have to get Carlos back on here for that. Carlos is he's a patent attorney, trademark and patent attorney. Chris, now last week or the week before, for particular people that are interested in tiny houses, because like in a lot of your larger cities, some people haven't been able to do it. Me, I do little tiny rural towns with no problems, but explain Appendix Q and why that's important, that anybody interested in tiny homes, particularly in larger metro areas, need to know about it.
Yes, Appendix Q is in the IRC. That's the International Residential Code Book. And it's just like your city has all cities have different codes as far as building. Find out if your city is Appendix Q compliant. If they are, it gives you the opportunity to have an upstairs without a stairs. You can use a ship ladder. You can use an alternating staircase. You can lower the ceiling height in your kitchens and your bathrooms and have a loft sleeping area above them. Appendix Q gives you a lot of options that your city might not be adapted to. Now, one of the things is they don't want you to be in a kindling box. There's an issue in the kitchen underneath you. Your house is just going to engulf and you're not going to get out. When I addressed my city, I was told by the building inspector that's been here for 30 years, he told me, he says, Chris, he says, they will never adapt Appendix Q to our building code. And I went through a meeting, and they happened to be in a tiny house community meeting that had been going on for a year that I just found out about, so I came and sat in on it. And all I heard was 50 people tell me problems that they came up with on why not to build the tiny houses. And mainly, it was about the weight, putting them on, because they were willing to maybe put them on trailers and stuff. But they don't allow trailers in this county. So that was a big deal, because it could open up a can of worms. And I made the suggestion about switching over to this other material, because it weighs half the weight of wood. It won't burn. We can put it, you know, fix it to a structure and not necessarily be on a trailer, or it could be on a trailer. That way we move them out of here. Because it's supposed to be a temporary transitional thing. Or it could be your permanent living situation. Everybody's different, but it's the growth of where you're going to go, not where you've been. And that's what the future is about. So when I met with these people, they had all these problems. I answered every one of them. All of their experts agreed and said everything that I said was true. The lady that was sitting next to me happened to be the lady that did the codes in our city. And she says, most things that sound too good to be true are. And I said, well, your experts here, all of your architects and all your professors, they all agree with what I've said. Are you going to fail? I'm not going to fail. I'm not going to let you fail. Are you going to fail? I started looking at everybody in the room. I said, everybody here is for a reason. So if you're here for each other, you're not going to fail because you're not alone. And we're going to do this and bring unity into this community and give an equal opportunity. And she went and adapted Appendix Q. And my the building inspector wound up retiring, but he hated his job for the last 11 years that he's done it. Because nobody knows about Appendix Q. They're not, you know, advertising it. But he said, do you know how many people are mad at me because I wouldn't let them have an upstairs living situation in their house because they didn't have room for a stair? And now those houses can all change if they knew that they had Appendix Q. So Appendix Q is something everybody needs to know about. It's the same thing as Section 8. You know, everybody in the country, you know, basically knows what Section 8 is. Well, Section 8 was designed to hold society in place. Now, what we want to do is educate people on Section 3. Because in the 60s, there was a Section 3. And anytime I've looked at legislation and anything else, it ain't went backwards in numbers. They didn't start with the high one and go to the first one to figure out how they wrote that legislation. They went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So they had Section 3 before they had Section 8, but they implemented Section 8, and Section 3 blows Section 8 out of the water because you don't lose your benefits for doing better. Section 8 holds society in place, and we don't want society to be in that place anymore because they've made that place poverty. We want people to prosper, and it's time to create those great-paying jobs, create beautiful structures to live in, safer structures to live in, and just actually create a community. Create something in you that matters, and because it's you that does matter. Without you, we don't have unity. That's you and I together. Why? Let's get it on, you know? Let's show people why we're here.
And this is, like I said, we'll have classes where people can learn how to build. Like I said, we're probably this weekend, we'll start up if you're not on Clubhouse, get on Clubhouse, because then you'll be able to catch a lot of the content and live events that we'll be doing. We'll be building, and you don't have to have any previous experience to start learning. Let's see. Now, that particularly for now, you can do this for your own personal needs, or if some of you want to build, and you have no intention of living in any of the structures that you build, you might want to use it, you know, to rent out, you know, Airbnb or some type of situation like that. So we'll give you information on, like, for me, I like to buy in rural areas, agriculturally zoned zone areas. Now I'll tell you why. I even have stipulations on population. I focus in on towns that have a population of 400 people or less. And the reason, and what, that's not enough. On top of that, the land or that town has to be predominantly a rural town. Reason why is in rural communities with small populations like that, tiny populations like that, you have less rules and regulations and more overall freedom to live the way you want to live, or in my case, build the way I want to build. In many cases, there is no building inspector. There is no code enforcement. There is no police. All right. But the larger the population, due to the more people that you have, you're going to need more rules and regulations. And the larger the tax base is needed, I mean, like, for instance, all of your, most of your high-profile homicides, George Floyd, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Everybody's heard of Minneapolis, large city. Eric Garner, New York City. All right, that's one of the major, that's one of the biggest, it's the largest city and metro area in the United States and one of the largest metro areas in the world. You know, Trayvon Martin. People in Moscow, well, Timbuktu has heard of Orlando. Orlando isn't a, it's a big city, but it's not a mega big city, but it's on the radar. It's a lot of people that live there. So, however, Nome, Alaska, Bangor, Maine, Tallahassee, Oklahoma, Mount Bayou, Mississippi, Jasper, Florida, you don't hear about those places in the news. So those are my preferential places to go buy land that's zoned agricultural, because I can do, I can do, there's more freedom to do what I want to do and build what I want to build on land that's zoned agricultural versus land that is zoned residential. Also, the price is, you know, goes dramatically up. Like, I bought 10 acres of land in Texas for $2,000 total. That averages $200 an acre. Whereas, that's in Texas. Now, if I go to Houston, Texas, or San Antonio, Texas, or Dallas, Texas, or Austin, Texas, there are apartments that rent for $2,000 or more per month. That doesn't fit my budget. So, granted, the nearest Walmart might be 2.5 hours away. I'm all right with that because, and we're not going to get around to it today, 15-minute villages, which is taken from the idea of 15-minute cities, is in a county that I'm in Texas, is everything we need is at a couple of general stores in the town might have a population, that the main town has a population of 1,700 people. But I'm even outside of that with that 10 acres. So, and it's only about an hour away from the Mexico border. But so we instruct people, well, we suggest on, you know, where to buy. Now, a lot of these places are not remote, because you can find a lot of rural bargains that are just 15 to 20 minutes away from Walmart, a bowling alley, restaurants, anything you can think of. Now, you might have to drive a little bit further, maybe 30 to 45 minutes to get to a major airport, but there are plenty, like, let me put the landscape like this. In the United States, there are 19,500 municipalities. 19,000. There are towns that have a population. There are municipalities in the United States. Now, that's not all the communities. That's just ones that have a municipal charter. So that's towns that have a municipal charter of just one person living in that town, all the way up to New York City that's got over 9 million. But there are 19,000. Those are incorporated communities. There's also probably just as many, if not more, unincorporated communities in the United States as well. I suggest find a town or a community that is unincorporated. When you live in an unincorporated community, it's less expensive because they offer less services in town because their tax base is small and they don't have it in their budget to offer a police department or a fire department. Typically, they'll probably have a volunteer fire department, but they won't have a police. So all you that own, you feel paranoid living in the city, I don't like the police or whatever, find you a community that is unincorporated and move there, or start your own town. There's about 7 to 14 new towns popping up in the United States on the regular. 3 months ago, we had right on here, and we archive all our shows, we had three black women from Metro Atlanta, and just to briefly tell their story, they knew they can't change Atlanta politics. They don't have enough money, and they're not going to live long enough to change it. So they found a patch of land 2 hours outside of Atlanta, and they put together and said, look, you talk to 10 friends. They got their social capital together, and they got 19 families together, and those 19 families purchased 97 acres of land, and now they're up to 502 acres of land, and the name of the town that they're starting is called Freedom, Georgia. If you go to their website, it's the Freedom Georgia Initiative. And they're doing everything, regular houses, tiny houses, solar, they're doing the whole thing. And this, it started with three black women with no money. And they're up to 502 acres right now. They're forming their own town. If you go to their YouTube channel, just type in Freedom Georgia on YouTube, and they got a few videos on there, but go to the very first one, which is about 58 seconds long, and you got one of the founders on there talking about how they started with social capital. You talk to 10, I talk to 10. And out of that, they got 19 families. So, and they want their own town where they organize their own police force. They offered organizing their own mayor. Matter of fact, one of the three will probably end up being the first mayor of Freedom, Georgia. But they're not unique. There are other people out there doing the same thing. So we bring people on that as much as we can. And that would be an example of a micro village. The other towns in the United States, they're up to 502 acres. They started with 97. The other towns in the United States, they have less than that. You know, so, but we cover that stuff all the time. Anyway, okay. Well, Reba, any other comments you have for today? If Reba's still around. Well, she's typically babysitting.
Yes, I'm still here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm still here.
So, yeah, up in Chicago where you are, or Milwaukee, because you're in two metro areas.
Yeah.
You can start with something as small as a backyard or a parking space.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, you heard it yourself. I mean, if a teenager can put together something for $200, an 11-year-old can put something together with a total of $800, $400 to get the structure, $400 to fix it up. So, you know, and Craigslist is available in many places. And Facebook Marketplace, I have friends in Uganda who build stuff and put it on Facebook Marketplace in Uganda on a regular. And I got friends in Nigeria, they're carpenters, they do the same thing. So it's only limited to your imagination of what you can do. So it'll be very interesting to see how many areas around the globe on December 24th, where we'll be actually be building in.
We do have an brother. Let me have WF Doc, world famous Doc, is the name. He's my music producer. Last track that I recorded, we re-recorded called "Celebrate Your Life," and he's rapping. I'm doing background vocals and ad lib. He actually has scheduled a fundraiser for investors on June 23rd, the Grand Ballroom Chicago, same place where I had my last event. And it's for business owners and investors only. It's a private event. So he is acquiring land, and he is, his project is global. He's also coming out with a clothing line. I saw T-shirts in this one ad that he just sent a link to. So I would love to have him on because we basically, you know, all have, you know, the concept of investing in sleeping quarters, you know, and also being able to invest. So I did want to mention that June 24th at the Grand Ball of Chicago. So Doc, if you wouldn't mind, he could come and share a little bit more, maybe on tomorrow or some other day this week, just to share and give his contact information. So yeah, it's going to be a private event. And the tables are going to be going for... Pretty much. We look for vendors as well.
Hold on, Reba.
Okay,
hold on, Reba. I'm going to play because I'm going to get briefly into this 15-minute villages. This ties into what we've been talking about as well. All right, within these, the things we've been talking about, I imagine we're going to see some elements of the Jetsons in there because, in my opinion, we're living in the age of the Jetsons right now. It, with these apps, the way people work, you know, because we're setting up communities where You can be out in the middle of nowhere, and I mean, work. I think we did a couple of stories on this here. They call it. Not co-workers, but some with cold jobs or whatever. Where you have some. It was one guy that we featured on here that. The guy has 11 jobs, 11 full-time jobs, but the companies that he works for are in 10 different cities. So how is this person able to work 11 jobs in 10 geographical areas here in the United States? And he makes over $1.2 million a year. Well, he works remotely from home. I consider that a Jetsons concept. Now, we had somebody on, Angela Griffin, and we're going to bring her on, if not Friday or sometime next week again. She was on here about 2 weeks ago. She lives in Orlando, well, the Orlando metro area, Central Florida, and she owns properties in like 7 states. So she buys them at, like, really, really discounted prices. I mean, houses as well as, I think she bought, like, 11 acres worth of land in one location out of state, I think in Indiana or either Alabama. She bought 11 acres of land for under $400. I think it's actually under $350. Well, I'm going to say $400 just to be conservative. So we're going to bring her back on. So you're going to have people that are taking these concepts and then, you know, we're going to take a look into the future, you know, because RoboCop is here. RoboCop doesn't look like the movie's RoboCop, at least not yet. But RoboCop, at least a few handful of markets in the United States, does exist. We got driverless cars, concept cars out here. So, and a lot of these little communities that people have already set up or in the process of setting up, and one of you out listening right now might be one of those people, there'll be concepts that that will probably be mainstream in, you know, a few short years from now. So, you know, because, you know, like it's streaming. And you don't need to go to a movie theater anymore. You know, you can stream everything you need from right where you're home or wherever you got a phone or whatever. So we're going to take a look at what, because some communities, there's a lot of people out here that just want to live off-grid. And when I say off-grid, they don't want a utility bill. They don't want a light bill. They don't want a water bill. You know, the guy that I'm talking about with the $300,000 tax bill, there are people that want to disconnect from those grids. All right, the solutions are out there. You know, you got AI out here, artificial intelligence, you know, so, you know, how often do you go? Reba, what are you now? You got a full house. You got three sons and you got two grandchildren. You go shopping in person, or how often do you use apps and then they bring the shopping to you?
I actually, so I do have friends. Social capital gets it to me. So often, probably twice a week, if that. I try to do the shopping like once a month. But then I do have friends who like have food that they give away and community services and things like that. And then friends who bring me food. Now, when my son and I went shopping, we shopped for the month. Yeah, so that's the concept. You know, I'm looking to get this building.
So you guys go out, you know, do you use apps at all? Because most of the time.
I use fast food, honestly, not shopping. GoPuff,
okay.
I did want to introduce that to, because my sons were trying to get me to make money doing the Instacart service.
Right.
It's not something that I want to do. So much easier now.
Instacart.
Okay.
Yeah, I use Instacart, and they bring groceries to me. I just put it on the phone, and they bring it to me.
And then I found out
yesterday,
that
yesterday I used DoorDash. Got on DoorDash, and I shopped at Aldi, and they brought it to me.
Know what? I will take advantage of that. It is one of those Jetson type. You know, I still think, you know, just go and get my own stuff, but with my not having my vehicle available, up and running, you know, that is something that I would do. And I found out a minister friend of mine, she actually said a family was able to use food stamps, which was interesting. So they make sense. It's food. Now, my son and I, when we were door dashing, it took forever to find all of those items. This particular customer had, like, 24 items. It was terrible. It took us 2.5 hours. It was a store that we didn't know, but at the same time, some of the items weren't available. So the good thing is that we could just stay there. So I've seen both sides of it. But as a customer, I have never actually ordered. I have Mercado on my phone. I have an app. I just haven't used it.
Right.
Yeah, but I will.
Well, you know what?
I will.
That, you brought up a topic that we're going to take a look at people that have actually done, been on the shopper side of it, where they're going shopping for somebody else. Because I never thought of it. Because you're right. You know, what stores do? How well do you know the store? You know that's a very good point you brought up. Because, like, I used DoorDash yesterday evening, so I just threw Aldi, so I only had about 8 items, but they brought it to the house. So, we need to do a podcast on that. Now, I got a friend of mine in Dallas, Texas. See if I can get him on here. And he pays his bills. He works 3 hours a day, Monday through Friday. He just does airport runs. That's it.
Hey, you dare.
Wow. Right. So, and then you have YouTubers on here that, you know, they're making, I mean, travel vloggers that are, they're doing $15,000 to $35,000 or more per month traveling, you know. So, I mean, people that have paid off their parents' or grandparents' mortgages by travel vlogging. So now, with, you know, the discussion that we've been having, me, you, Chris, and some others, I'm looking at one online, and they actually see us build stuff on the regular. I'm pretty sure that we can build a YouTube channel that'll give us 1 million subscribers. It might take us a while to get there, but we'll get 1 million subscribers. And then we'll have 6 and 7 figure days at least once a month. Randy Jones is, Chris, on average, what are those houses that Randy, what do you think they cost? Not including the custom design homes.
They range around $25,000 to $35,000.
Okay, so let's say $25,000, and let's say on average, let's put them at 4, because he builds 3 to 5 days. So let's say the average is 4 a day. So Randy Jones is grossing. I mean, he can't keep all his, he's got a payroll of making all that, $100,000 a day.
Yep.
That's $2 million a month. That's taking weekends off. I don't know. Now, Randy, I think he might go 7 days a week, but I'm just saying, that's the kind of output that he has documented. He's out there every day. I tune into him about twice a week on YouTube. That's his primary way of marketing, at least that I know of. So...
amazing.
Right. So
yeah, and he started last
and
April.
Randy's channel
he started last April.
So there you go. Now, for those, matter of fact, Chris Collins, who's on air with us right now, Chris Collins is a builder. I consider myself still in the learning phase. Chris Collins is a builder. Okay, Chris, for people that want information about what you do and what you can teach them and all that, how can they get in touch with you and your social media stuff?
HopeForHousing.org or .com, and that's with the F-O-R. If you use the number 4, we have HopeForHousing.org, so there's 3 of them. And social media, the best one is just Instagram. I do have a Housing Our People Everywhere page on Facebook. One of them got hacked. It's the one that I had all my followers on. So I started a new one. I still have it. So, it needs to grow the followers to that. But Instagram is Chris_Hope_Collins. And everything that you'll see on that Instagram built by the youth. It was redone by the youth. It was about showing what they're doing so that others can be able to see what they're going to be able to do. And I appreciate it. Yeah, no, my phone number, I'll give you an easy one there. I mean, this is an easy way to get a hold of me. 309-542-6319. And any blueprint that's ever been designed, anyone that ever will be, can be built out of this material. So just give you some.
All right, and Chris is on Clubhouse. And for those of you who are on Clubhouse, if you're not on Clubhouse, get on Clubhouse. I'm on there every day. Clubhouse never sleeps. And Chris had somebody on here last week that he's got a project going in Orlando with a church. They've got 5 acres. So Chris will be associated with that. People from Bay League. There's a lot of people that Chris is connected to. So and he can probably give you he knows what's going on, you know, nationwide. You get a good bird's eye view through him. And then Reba's got stuff out. Now, Reba, are you doing, I know you're doing stuff out of Chicago. What about Milwaukee?
My youngest son just went to join my eldest. My 22-year-old just rode out to Wisconsin on yesterday so they can look at some properties. My eldest son actually needs to, he's working out there. He lives there and working. So they're looking for, they're going to identify some land, and then I'm going to help with the administrative side, like calling the city and so forth to see, because there's a lot of land out there. So we don't have anything as of yet, but there is some development going on. There's a house that's being restored. It was actually a complete gut out, and they're doing housing. My eldest son, AJ was asked to manage that housing program. So he's currently working out there. So as far as us getting our own land as of yet, we are connecting with some individuals that are doing some remodeling and development. And
let me ask you this. What's closer, Milwaukee or Hopkins Park, Illinois?
Well, that drive, we got turned around, but they're probably about the same. I really don't know. I have not looked it up. I haven't done a fair from Milwaukee's like 2 hours away. And we were driving
there. Oh, well, Hopkins about an hour away.
I'm thinking because of the different roads that we have to take. You said hour?
Well, when we went to Hopkins Park, when I flew up there that day when we met with Pleasant, I said it was about an hour's drive.
You know what? We actually did go to a couple of towns, so that's what it was, because we drove through Pembroke.
Well, with Pembroke and Hopkins Park is, you know, almost one and the same.
Yeah, but we went, we were just driving.
And we drove out. It was the start of, I guess, rush hour traffic when we left Pleasant House.
Yeah.
I mean, because we made it back to the airport. It was still daylight when you guys got me to the airport. So
right.
I think it was about out. See, because I'm thinking there's a lot of people who can't afford to live in Chicago, but they can afford to live in Hopkins Park. And if we can get a patch of land, you know, somewhere. I mean, you know, it doesn't have to be in Kankakee County. I don't, you know, all the places up there, but, you know, because you got a lot of people that live in Gary and Hammond, Indiana, that come to Chicago every day.
Yeah,
so,
that's true.
That
is true. So Hopkins Park in Pembroke, yeah, it was not that far. It was not. That was pretty interesting. But
we went to some other areas in Pembroke, which is, well, like you said, we were in rush hour, and then we got turned around a little bit, lost our signal, which was scary.
Yeah, we lost the signal about two or three times.
Yeah, but now certainly Milwaukee's further distance. Yeah.
Right. Well, there's a lot of opportunity. Like, see, if you get to the – now, in Milwaukee, are you looking in the town of Milwaukee itself, or are you looking on the outskirts?
Actually, Milwaukee, but concerning acquiring land, it'd be interesting to see. We just have not done – I would certainly want to speak with my fiance and friend who's doing the rehab property, just to see what he knows, just kind of do some networking and find out who knows what, as well as some online. Town leaders.
I'm going to see if I can get Angela Griffin back on here either Thursday or Friday, if not tomorrow. She bought, Angela Griffin, she was on here like a couple of weeks ago. Angela Griffin is she's a woman that lives in Central Florida, Orlando metro area. She bought six houses in Gary for $3,600. So I'm going to see if, I'm going to see if I can get her on here tomorrow. And because if you can purchase houses or land for like incredible prices like that, and she does this like every day, then you'll be able to move quicker. But and it's not once you know where to look, anybody can do the same thing. Now my thing is I'd just rather buy the land by the acre and then put my own structure on it. But she does both. She buys land and she bought six houses. They need work, but she bought six houses for $3,600. That's $600 a house. So she's going to save those. Those houses, that's part of her retirement plan. So I'm going to see if I can get her on here tomorrow.
That's an amazing plan.
Brother Tyron Smith has purchased property
out there, just to give you that heads up. Tyron Smith with National Black University, he's purchased property out in Indiana as well for cheap.
Okay. All right. Well, we need to get him back. I've spoken to him offline, but yeah, we need to get him on here so he can educate people on this. On that note, hey, look, 2 hours has gone by. We can't save the world in 2 hours. We tried, though. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.